background. I left New Mexico in a snowstorm. I had dropped into Anchorage and it was very warm. The Pueblo people of New Mexico are about 34,000 strong. They occupy two states in New Mexico and in Arizona. There's 19 Pueblos in New Mexico. The 19 Pueblos range from Taos in the north to below Albuquerque in the south. Those are the 19 Pueblos in New Mexico. Interestingly enough, when the Spanish first came to New Mexico, there were some 88,000 peoples, Pueblo peoples there. In some 100 years' time, the population had dwindled to 10,000 Pueblo Indians. The Spanish came in 1540, and the Pueblo peoples have been in contact with alien governments for 440 years. And I think the kinds of things that that might be of interest are the persistence of the Pueblos with regards to some kinds of things that they have been doing, primarily religion that they've pursued. Because they're an agricultural society founded on religious philosophies, and these things are very strong, as you can see in some of the fight by Blue Lake for 64 years for the land that was lost. It was very difficult for the people of the United States to understand why Taos Pueblo wanted Blue Lake back so badly. The Pueblo people never quite told them why they had to have Blue Lake back. But essentially, what was happening was that the Pueblo people have an origin myth that they came out from underneath lakes, certain lakes, and they came out on top and made journeys and then settled in certain places. And the earth is, the land that they dwell upon is sacred. For example, with the Tehua Pueblos in New Mexico, there's six Tehua Pueblos. And of these Pueblos, there are four sacred mountains. Truchas Peak to the east, San Antonio Peak to the north, Tsikuma to the west, and the one right above Albuquerque, Sandia Peak, to the south. In between that area is sacred to the Pueblos. And I think that bounded the world immediately. They said, this is our land, and it's sacred. And every time we go out of here, some kinds of ritual must be done. Some kinds of cleansing ceremonies must be done. Immediately, there was a boundary around Pueblo country, religious boundary. But the Spanish didn't realize this. Neither did they realize that the Pueblos had a government to begin with. Because when the Pueblos came, when the Spanish came in 1540, they settled Pueblo country and gave the Pueblos a government. And this government, they said, was going to be for your own good. Well, the Pueblos, as they were, said, we'll accept it. They always say, we'll accept it, because along the way, you will see that they also accepted the Indian Reorganization Act and incorporated it into the same system that they had. A system upon a system upon a system upon a system, but always at the base is religion, and always at the base is a philosophy that really guides them. I think that because of this, there is persistence that is really tenacious, a kind of thing that I think maybe has a message for people who want to get something done. Ada Deer was talking about community organization, social action. I think that in terms of means and ends that Alinsky talks about, the Pueblos really had an end, and that was that this world was only a place that they were coming onto for a while, but that they were going back to the lake of emergence. The U.S. Congress could not realize when they were giving Taos Pueblo 48,000 acres or 3,000 acres around the lake solely, that what they were saying was, you know, we'll give you this. Taos Pueblo was saying, no, we cannot take that, because they did not realize that it was only a part of a whole area that was defined in their world, in their mythology, as being useful, functional. As they came out of the lake of emergence, they defined places that were sacred. And with this, it was such that the Pueblos are secretive. Knowledge is only for the elderly. Knowledge is for the societies. Knowledge is not for the everyday man. And knowledge is not certainly for the Spanish. Knowledge certainly is not for the English. That kind of knowledge is not for peoples of alien worlds, because it's said that any time that this information is given out, it loses its power. There is no longer a life to live. So for 440 years, the Pueblos have been dealing with foreign governments, and these foreign governments have been doing all kinds of things to the Pueblos, and yet they've survived. They survived the Indian Reorganization Act, they survived the Martinez case, they survived so on and so on. But I think that this based the religion really combined with family, combined with government, those three kinds of things that they put together, have put together even before the Spanish came, enabled them to survive governments, enabled them to survive all kinds of things that were happening along the way. Just to give you an idea of the kinds of things that are happening, Taos Pueblo I think I have probably have to retreat, and I would need first of all a cooler here, so that anyway, Taos Pueblo felt that the lands were really theirs and that they were sacred. The Indian lands were really never defined by the Spanish. Anthropologists really say that Spanish gave Pueblos land that was 4 leagues from the church door. This was never true, because land was never defined. The only people who defined their land were the Pueblos. And as they defined the land, the Pueblos came and said, the Spanish came and said, you can use this land because you're settled and because you have used it ever since before we came. So from 1540 to 1900, there were no relationships, absolutely no relationships, almost, with the U.S. government. Some kinds of interesting things happened. The Pueblos had been dealing with the Spanish for about 300 years before the Americans came. In 1802, Zebulon Pike passed by Pecos Pueblo. And as he passed by Pecos Pueblo, he saw a cross on top of the church, and he said, "These people are Christians." And he was surprised. Where in the world did Christianity come from, you know? But the place was in ruins, and they thought, well, gee, wish, you know, Pueblo people have been dealing with the Spanish for 300 years prior to the coming of the English. So that some kinds of relationships had stabilized, but they had never defined the land, who the land belonged to. The land was always used in common. The Spanish called it común, common land. And the Pueblos also took up the term, and the Pueblos always knew what their land was. So it was not until 1891 when the Surveyor General began to define some of their lands that they had vague feelings for boundaries. So they used some of these boundaries for planting, for grazing, those kinds of things. But in 1926, the Pueblo Lands Board Act began to determine what land belonged to the Pueblos, because in the meantime, Spanish people had moved into what was considered Pueblo land. Even the 4 leagues from the church door that was said to be Pueblo land was being infiltrated. People were coming in, alien people were coming in and settling right on Pueblo land. Well, the Pueblo really didn't care, you know. They said, "We have been here for 300 years. We'll share this land with you. Besides, there's a lot of land. We don't need any boundaries." And that sort of feeling was taking place. So the Pueblo people really didn't begin to interact with the U.S. government probably until the 1900s, when the U.S. government came and said, "We want to educate your children, and we'd like to put a day school on the reservation." And then some interactions began to take place with that. I think that it really didn't pick up in terms of relationships with federal government and Pueblo peoples until 1926, the U.S. government and Pueblo peoples, because in 1926 they developed the Pueblo Lands Board Committee, which began to define what lands belong to the Indian people, what lands belong to the Pueblo peoples. And it was not until recent, very recent, and still land is, you know, is being determined. So land is really still in question. In 1976 through 78, for example, Santa Clara Pueblo, where I'm from, had a petition before the Claims Commission. And the Claims Commission said that property at that time was worth something like about $1.50 an acre. So we will give you $26,000 for that land. But some of this land included the shrine, the mountain shrines to the east that bounded this world as the people had defined it as they came out from the Lake of Emergence. And so they dare not give up that piece of land. And they weren't about to accept any kind of monies. So they said, "Take the money, we don't want it. We, you know, it's always been our stand that this land is really where we live, and since before you came, this was sacred land to us." And so money, Joe, wasn't accepted by the Santa Claras either, turned down. So the Santa Claras are still on record. Taos Pueblo, in the meantime, had land that they had been using, their Lake of Emergence. In 1906, this land was put into Forest Service jurisdiction. Taos Pueblo said, that belongs to us. And, you know, they couldn't say, Taos Pueblo couldn't say to the U.S. Senate, that's where we go back to when we die. As a matter of fact, you know, to those of you who are Christians here, to those of you who have another belief of where heaven is, where hell is, where those kinds of things are, you know, the Pueblo people believe that they came out from the lake of emergence, returned to the lake of emergence again after death, and supernaturals dwell there who were there before the emergence and who are always going to be there. As a matter of fact, impersonations take place of this good life that happens between the supernaturals and the people, the Pueblo peoples. So a religion has always been there before the coming of the Spanish and is continually being defined on a yearly basis. Taos Pueblo started asking for the land in 1906. In 1926, the U.S. government offered them $279,000 and said, this will compensate you for the 50,000 acres that have been incorporated into national forest land. They turned it down. They said, we don't want it. You know, how can anybody, you know, they never voiced it, but the thinking always was, how can anybody think of taking away the place where we go back to when we die? So Congress couldn't get it through their head that, you know, people have a reality of their own, a way of looking at the world which is as valid as Genesis 1:1, which is as valid as John 3:16, or those kinds of things, you know. And it's beyond me that people are not able to see another person's point of view. But that's what keeps happening in federal government relationships with the Pueblo peoples. So the Taos Pueblo people turned down the $297,000. And from 1966 to 1969, five bills were introduced through Congress, not by litigation, but because Taos Pueblo was able to define this as a religious issue. And I think that one of the things that happens is that the U.S. people maybe can understand when it's reframed as religion, you know, as something that's meaningful to me, like the Bible, you know, like Mother, God, and Country, that sort of reframing. So churches began to give them support, but they got massive support on a national level from friends, and changes began to happen. In 1970, after 65 years of fighting with the U.S. Congress under President Nixon, Taos Pueblo and received title to 48,000 acres, which included Blue Lake. Finally, something had happened, but for the U.S. Congress to realize that these people were not going to stop and were not going to accept money, and that this religious belief that was there was important enough to pursue as long as they defined themselves as a people. As a matter of fact, That was the only way that they could define themselves as a people in relation to the land. They could not define themselves as a people without the land in the context of everything, because as the emergence legend says, you know, it structures how they're supposed to live, it structures what they're supposed to do when they're here before they return back to the lake of emergence, and it tells them what's going to happen after they die. So, you know, how can any people give up heaven? As a matter of fact, they can't. I'm going to close out by saying that in 1934, Santa Clara Pueblo accepted U.S. government overtures through the Secretary of the Interior, through the Bureau of Indian Affairs Office, to have a constitutional government. In 1689, they had also said to the Spanish, we will take and have a governor, we will have a lieutenant governor, we will have a alguaciles, fiscales, and mayordomos, and so on and so on. They accepted the government. All the time, the caciques, the religious leaders, who are both the centralized heads of the native government, priests, knowledgeable men who guide the pueblo, two of them, one during summer solstice, one during winter solstice, said, we will accept it as a face. They accepted Spanish government as a face. They lived with it. They learned how to use it. The cacique still made the decision about who was to run for governor, who was to run for lieutenant governor, alguaciles, fiscales, whatever. Okay, in 1934, they said to the U.S. government, okay, fine, we'll accept a constitution. A constitution was drawn up. This constitution, they said, will include those religious parties that are defined as existing right at the present in the pueblo. And a system was worked out where the religious base became the decision maker for the constitutional government. As a matter of fact, the constitution is there, and it defines how the tribal council is to operate. But guess who nominates the slate of officers? The cacique nominates the slate of officers. Okay? Not only that, but, you know, this face governments, the constitutional government and the Spanish government systems do business with the outside world. But the caciques have ultimate veto power on what happens in those societies. So, you know, anthropologists, when they first came, Adolf Bandelier came in the 1890s, said, in Spanish, mas or menos, it's going to be 50 to 70 years before these people disappear as a group, as a cultural identity. In 1900s, in the early 1900s, Elsie Clues Parsons, the most noted of ethnologists, came by and said, how long will it be, 50 or 60 years, before these people are no longer Indians? To this day, Taos Pueblo, right this very day, Taos Pueblo, and you've seen pictures of Taos Pueblo, has no electricity within the confines of the pueblo. And you can argue that religious governments are not democratic, are maybe a theocracy, but I think the point that the Pueblo peoples are making is that, you know, we have the right to define how we're going to live, and you know, either you have to kill us off in mass, or we're going to live this way as long as we choose to live this way, because this is how we define ourselves as a people.
Mr. Naranjo, I hate to interrupt you. I think we all find this fascinating, but I would like to hear more to continue the discussion tomorrow. I got bawled out last week when we didn't adjourn soon after 4, so I forgive me. I think I should call the proceedings to a...
I wonder if I can have 2 minutes.
And, sure, please.
And I'll end it. But in any way, in 1984, the Pueblo was taken to the Supreme Court in Martinez versus Santa Clara, because Santa Clara said only those children who are born from male members shall be considered members of the Pueblo. It went through the state Supreme Court, through the U.S. District Court of Appeals in Denver, and on up to the Supreme Court, challenged all the way by DNA, the Navajo legal assistance, because the Martinezes were half Navajo. In that decision, which began to support sovereignty of Indian tribes, the U.S. government briefly said to Santa Clara that Santa Clara had the right to determine who its members shall be, had the right to define its membership. Again, this religious society, because of its persistence, won. That doesn't say that the Pueblo members are satisfied with membership ordinance the way it is. All it's saying is that again and again the theme comes through that we are a people, we define how we're going to be. I think by comparison, only by persistence, these kinds of things might have a message, I don't know, some kinds of contrast in message from one people to another. Gee, it's terribly hot under these lights when you talk. I'm glad I'm done.
Well, I hope you are not done. I think we would like to pick up the discussion tomorrow morning and then carry on with Mr. Coulter, and then, if we may, Mr. Lerner, turn to you and go on from there. And could we try to be here at 9 a.m.? And let's try to get started at 9 a.m., and then we will be in good shape. So we'll see you at 9.
Was and why was it favorable to have both? Whereas sounds like Accutec just dissolved their municipality.
Yeah, because I think that the whole that issue of sovereignty is right in there. You know, say, for instance,